This is the Higher Ed Tech Podcast, Season 2, Episode 17, Adobe Alternatives and Stock Photo Options.
Welcome to today's Higher Ed Tech Podcast. I'm Tim Van Norman, the Instructional Technologist here at Irvine Valley College.
And I'm Brent Warner, professor of ESL here at IVC. We both enjoy integrating technology into the classroom, which is what this show is all about.
Welcome. We're glad you're here with us. So Brent, what's new for you?
Yeah, you know, we got kind of the same stuff going on, but I know you're in a bigger process than I am. So,
oh yes.
See boxes behind you and moving going on and all that good stuff.
Oh yeah. By the time we record our next episode, I should be in a new facility, meaning house. Mm-hmm. We've been renting this place for a lot of years and now we're moving much closer to Irvine Valley College.
Great.
So
that'll be exciting. A new change, a different change of pace, I guess, in certain ways.
Yeah, we'll be closer to the beach, which hopefully is a fun thing for us. We enjoy that. And yeah, we'll see how that all works out.
Good. Yeah, sounds good. So, Tim, today we're going to be talking a little bit about just options, I guess, that people have. It's kind of an options episode. And so I thought we're going to talk a little bit about Adobe and a little bit about stock photos and kind of see how that works. So let's jump over there.
Sounds good. So Brent, you brought to me the idea of Adobe alternatives for this episode, and I love it because I hear all the time from people, students, faculty, and staff who, hey, I need to be able to do this at home and I need to be able to do it on a non-company computer, a non-campus computer. I need to be able to whatever. Right. And Adobe feels very expensive.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Especially for those of us who are not graphics people and using Adobe every day, all day, the $60 a month that the Adobe Creative Suite can cost can get very pricey for somebody who uses it once a month, maybe.
Yeah.
And so while a lot of schools have alternatives or have really good plans that they can get, what about once you leave the campus? What about other things? And so I thought that was a great question that you asked. And yeah. So what brought that up for you?
Well, one, I mean, there was a bit of a tuss on Twitter going on about people trying to cancel their monthly subscription and then getting charged an annual fee cost for canceling their Creative Cloud. So they're like, so there was, ooh. Yeah, it wasn't very good look for Adobe. but to be fair, like I do have to say, like, hey, Adobe is a really powerful set of project, you know, suite. And so we have access to it on campus, which is really a nice benefit, you know, one of the nice things at our school. But, you know, you're, like you said, you go home and we don't get access, right? And so, I thought, you know, like a lot of us, just like you're saying, a lot of us do use these things, maybe even on a daily or every other day basis to put something basic together. Like I am an amateur, very amateur graphic design enthusiast. I like it, you know, but I'm not a pro by any level. It really doesn't make sense for me to personally buy something like Photoshop. But it totally makes sense if that's your career. But I think a lot of students or teachers would kind of get into these things and then go, oh, this is useful for me, but I'm not going to pay that much money for it every single time. And so so some of these choices that we wanted to talk about, and in Adobe, it kind of spreads the gamut. But we had mentioned, you know, a lot of people know, okay, well, Word, I don't want to get Word. And so we got the option for Google Docs or OpenOffice, LibreOffice, whatever. We've also talked about like you know, Camtasia, right? And it's like, well, Camtasia's too big. It's you know, it costs too much. It's a little older. Okay, so maybe I get Screencast-O-Matic or Screencastify or something like that, right? And so we want to do the same thing. We just want to talk about these and give people some choices to understand, hey, you're not stuck, you know, like you don't have to buy the top of the line thing to get some of your basic work done. And so, Tim, I thought we started off with you because this is one that people actually talk to you about with Acrobat and PDFs and all that good stuff.
Constantly. I get people all the time who are asking, how do I create an Adobe Acrobat file? How do I view it? And the viewer, Adobe Reader is free, which is great. But sometimes there's other factors that are involved. So when it comes to creating files, I like a package called Qt PDF. Mm. You literally install it. It works. I know for sure under Windows. I don't know about Mac, but I thought it worked for Mac too.
I think it does.
You install it and it basically is a printer and you print to Qt PDF and it creates this document for you and you opens it up and you're in it. And so you don't have to buy Adobe Acrobat. And it used to come on older computers before. Now various other packages are doing it, but that's one that I've used. Then the other part is to remember most of the programs like Word, Excel, Google Docs even, and other programs, you can just save as or export to PDF rather than printing. So by the way, if you're thinking about accessibility, exporting will continue with the accessibility that you built into your product, into your package and your document. If you print, you lose all accessibility setup. So just a factor to be aware of when you're creating PDF files.
You're saying export to PDF is good, but print to PDF is not good. Is that what you mean by that?
When it comes to accessibility, correct.
Got it. Okay. So you, for example, if people went back and listened to our Grackle episode, they set up their whole right. Google Doc with Grackle, then they export it as a PDF. They're cool. And they're going to still have a fully accessible PDF there.
Exactly.
Cool. Tim, I wanted to add one in there too for Mac people. There's one called PDF Pen that's been around for many, many years. And that is a pretty decent alternative. It's well known in the Mac world for PDF people. Like, and again, it has to be more robust. It's not just, hey, I'm exporting a document, but it's about like interacting with the PDFs and, you know, private links and locking it down and all those types of things. But that's, if you're a Mac person, that might be a choice for you as well.
Absolutely. Another part is, remember, when you're viewing a PDF, you don't necessarily need Adobe. By default, now Windows 10 comes and Edge will allow you to view and print PDF documents directly out of it. Safari, Chrome, they all have that capability built in. You don't need to have Adobe Acrobat on your computer to use it. Doesn't mean you don't want to have Reader, but it's a nice alternative if for any reason you are unable to do that. And that's part of what we're talking about in this whole thing is alternatives to the main products that we're talking about here.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because both the exporting like out of Google, for example, and the viewing inside of Chrome, that's how I tend to interact with most of my basic level documents, right? And like mm-hmm. when I need to go in and deal with them, I needed to go in, but I don't usually think about pulling it out for myself into you know, Acrobat or whatever. And to tell the truth, I have a bad experience with Acrobat every time. It's like clunky. It's a little like, how am I interacting with this? Why can't I just draw on top of it? Or why can't I just put a check mark in the checkbox? you had a reason for that when I was complaining to you about it pre-show, but you know.
Well, so that's one of the factors here is make sure, and this is the case with any software package, use the latest version if you can, mm-hmm. or at least really recent. If you're using an old version of Adobe Acrobat, for instance, it might not work on the new files. Plain and simple.
Come on,
no, and the reason, and by the way, the same thing with older versions of Word versus new versions of Word. The reason is because in the new versions, they've added a lot of enhancements. And so somebody will create this massive, incredibly beautiful document And now you try to open it on an old version of the program, and it doesn't have all those bells and whistles that you need.
You know what it makes me think of?
It's normal, but...
It makes me think of, like, those hoarders TV programs where it's like, oh, this is just an extra thing. I can't possibly get rid of this, right? This is such an important little bell to me that, you know, like, and it just adds up and it adds up. And then eventually the floor just falls out and buckles underneath the house. Anyways, let's move forward. So
I get that picture. and there's a lot of that that's involved in here. But as we took a look, you found an amazing graphic on Reddit or I don't know where you found it, but it says Reddit on it. Yeah. So I'm assuming that it eventually came from there. Can you tell me a little bit about what we're looking at here?
Yeah.
And this, you said you're going to post this
It. I'll put it into the show notes. Basically what it is, someone put together a huge list of alternatives to kind of the Adobe Creative Cloud suite. And so not Acrobat, but it's like Photoshop and Illustrator and Audition and InDesign and all of those things. And so we won't talk about every single one, but I thought, you know, a few of these might be worth sharing and at least opening up people's recognition that there are these things are out there, and then they can go and search for ones that suit their needs. So we'll talk about a couple basic ones. I think most people... it's useful to have a variation of Photoshop and, you know, a couple of different things. If people are into audio, obviously people listening have some appreciation for podcasts and audio. And so maybe some of the Audition alternatives. But let's just grab a look at a couple of these, because what I like about this graphic here, Tim, is it breaks it down by color code. And so it says, hey, these are free and open source. Or they're just free of charge, or they're a single purchase buy, right? And so maybe you spend $50 on it one time, but that's it. That's the one time, and it's going to be done and done. And so I've done that a few times. But let's look at a couple of these. And the other thing the graphic does is it tells you all the different platforms you can use it on. So if you're on Windows or on Apple or on Linux or whatever else it is. So Photoshop... I have played around with lots of different Photoshop alternatives over the years. Some I've spent more time in, some I've spent less time in, and some of these were new to me. But the most famous one is GIMP, G-I-M-P. It's a really well-known alternative, and it's what most people... who are really starting with like Photoshop type of things get started with, because they're like, I don't have any money to to figure out how to do these things. But here's all this program. And over the years, it really has become quite robust. I don't use it as much these years, but I'd like to go back in and take a look at it, because I believe that this is one of the ones that's open source. And so I love open source software where it's just like, hey, people are working on this and they're just sharing it out there. It's such a cool like sub community of techie people that I really just appreciate that. There's another one I saw called Sumo Paint. I don't know much about it, but I went and took a look at it and it seems pretty powerful. And then there's another famous one, Tim, that's just totally web-based. You just log into it right on your browser, and it's called Pixlr. And this one has been known for a while as well. Open it up and basically on your browser looks like a mini version of Photoshop. And so you get your little column of tools on the side. You can move them around. You can get your little blurs, and you know, all of those things are right in there. And it's really amazing how much stuff you can do now on the web, where we've talked about this in the past, but you know, things that had to be applications installed on your computer, that is less and less and less becoming the case. Almost, you know, at this point, it's very few things need to be installed, because there's such a great, powerful ability to work with things on the internet, as long as you have a connection.
Right. And to the point that you were just making, some of these are very... very robust. Some of them are also very simple, because somebody like me doesn't need all of the bells and whistles of Photoshop, but Pixlr is, that's P-I-X-L-R, has what I need. I can get in, get out, and I don't have to sit there and spend months learning a package just to use it. So that can, when we talk alternative, we're not necessarily talking one for one. We might be talking, hey, this is good enough for most people or most applications, instead of going for the full Photoshop feel.
Yeah. And don't necessarily fall for the level up trap that they kind of get you in, where it's like, oh, it's just a little better and you need that little extra piece of candy on top. It's like, no, really 99% of us actually don't need Photoshop, right? We just need something to get the basics done. Although it can be quite tempting. I'll just point out that there are a couple other ones on Mac, Pixelmator and Acorn. Actually, Pixelmator is the one that I use all the time. That's my default go-to photo editing app, and it's pretty powerful and gets a lot of the work done. So there are some other ones. So let's move out of photo. Well, this is still Photoshop. Photoshop painting, right? Because some people like to do editing with work, but then there's also the group of people that like to use Photoshop as like art, right? And painting and doing those types of things. So there are a couple selections and quite a few selections in there. The one that stood out to me that I know about is Procreate on the iPad. And if you're really getting into artsy stuff, Procreate is just an outstanding app. I don't know if you've played with it, Tim, or if you've seen it, but
I've seen it. I have not played with it, but yes. And the nice part, as you pointed out, it's on an iPad. So it's on a system touch screen, you know, because iPad is the only thing really that is touch screen on that size for Macs, but or Apple, I should say. But it does a beautiful job. What I've seen of it in videos and some of the work that it does.
Yeah.
And really, really nice.
It's a one-time purchase. I think it's $10, but it is like, it is the best $10 app I think you can get on an iPad. So, go ahead.
So I was going to say, so for sound, Audition.
Oh yeah.
that working with that Audacity, when we were looking at doing the podcast, I was talking to people and they're like, well, GarageBand or Audacity, just do it.
Yeah.
And I've got access to Adobe Audition. Just use Audacity or GarageBand.
Yep.
Okay. You know, those two packages are all over the place. I heard about it from people all over suggesting those two packages. And Audacity, I believe, is free. Mm-hmm. GarageBand free, or is it just a very, very reduced price?
No, it's free. It's just part of the Mac package when you buy a Mac. So either one is a great choice. You know, a lot of people really love Audacity and just say, like, simple, it gets the job done. That's great. I personally use GarageBand for editing these episodes. You know, I've thought about, just because of nerdy hobby interests, of opening it up in Audition, but haven't had to. You know, I'm fine. We're pretty straightforward. It's just like a couple little, you might have heard one cut earlier where it's like, hey, wait a second, what happened there? And that's because a siren went by, a fire truck went by. but these are great and free. And again, I don't know, like, I am not a sound engineer. I am not making movies. I don't need to have, you know, the super highest end thing. This is pretty pro quality for what we're dealing with.
And typically they're not as complicated as the Adobe package.
Yeah.
So, and one other point on all of these, we understand that if you are part of a California Community College, you may have the ability just simply to log in to Adobe and get this. But for those students who, when they leave, they don't have that ability anymore. And there's a lot of, it depends on how your agreement is with Adobe as to how you're going to be able to use this. So this is, well, I know, maybe it doesn't affect you right now. Think about it. It might also be you need a second account for a kid, or you want something simpler. So just, this is for you, even if you have access to Adobe, like both of us do. We have access to the full Adobe suite,
right?
But we still use these tools, even though that's not we have access.
And also, you know, the other thing is these things change and update and different things like that. So in any time in the future, it's always just a good little trick to say, like, whatever tool you're talking about, the Adobe version, and then just type in alternative to, right? Alternative to Photoshop, or, you know, Audition alternative. And you'll definitely see lists of these things come up pretty well.
Absolutely. So today's Zippy tip is for everybody, actually. And I learned more about that in this move that we talked about earlier. check with your ISP for updates and discounts. What do I mean by that? I found out when I was getting ready to move that I could go from 300 meg internet to 1 gig internet and actually save $30 a month.
Dang.
So check for updates. It's a good idea anyway, but also as an educator, there may be discounts available, especially with stuff having to do with COVID. So it never hurts to ask a question. They don't raise the price because you asked.
Yeah.
So ask.
Awesome. So Tim, we thought about the second option here of like looking at stock photos. And I think we might've touched on this a bit in the past. I can't remember exactly, but it's a good idea to bring this up every once in a while because, you know, teachers, we need to have good images, right? Whether we're putting them into slideshows, whether they're part of our Canvas shell, whatever it is, like we need to engage students. And so I thought it would be a good idea. And you know, as we talked about this, it's like, let's make this a section where we can share a few choices for people to get stock photos. Because the other thing is, I think not even 5 years ago, stock photos were like, you're like, it's always going to be that picture of the fish jumping out of the bowl. And it's like, oh, okay, the same stock mm-hmm. photos. But really, there's grown up to be this whole stock photo community of just contributors and artists and amateurs and all of these types of things. So there's like really, really excellent stock photos out there now for free. And you don't need, and it used to be like a whole barrier to entry and getting on iStockPhoto and, you know, paying something like $40 for one image, and it's like, and you don't need to do any of that stuff anymore. So the world of stock photos has really changed and grown a lot. And so I thought it might be good to share a few of these.
And remember, in doing this, there's always legal questions that you want to make sure you handle. And some of them you can even edit using the tools that we were just talking about before to put them in such a way that is useful for you in your class. So that said, Canvas itself, if you go in, you can use Unsplash and you don't need a separate account or anything like that. You literally go in, image, download the image from Unsplash, and you do a search and it'll come up with lots and lots of images based on pretty much anything you type in there for the search. So that's built into Canvas itself.
Unsplash is great too, because you don't, if you want to go outside of Canvas, if you just go to Unsplash directly, you don't even have to log in. They're just like, here's the picture, go ahead and download it. And I did check the accessibility on this one, like what do you need to do for licenses, and it's totally license free as long as it's actually an Unsplash image on there, because they do have some advertisements for like iStockPhoto or whatever. But like, you can just go download it and you can, like you said, mix it up, you can change it. This is not, it doesn't fall, I mean, it falls into the broadest Creative Commons where you don't even have to attribute for it, but you do have to just go in there and download it and grab the photo that you like. So that, you know, that's where a lot of this is moving to, and that's why it's like, wow, you can, you know, it's like all of the things that we're warned about for, like, hey, are you following the law, and is, you know, is there going to be some FBI agent that's going to be tapping on your door for illegally downloading a picture. You know, like, this is, it's pretty amazing just to say, I don't have to think about any of that. It's just on Unsplash. I'm going to grab it. So I do appreciate that.
So you mentioned also Pixabay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pixabay is another good one. I liked it quite a bit. There's, you know, same type of thing. You can go search in different categories of pictures and find all sorts of things. One thing, you know, just to be aware, some of these can be different in different ways, but there's no hot linking. So you do have to download the photo and then upload it to whatever source you want. So hot linking is when you embed from the original source, but that takes up server space on their part. And so every time your photo loads, and so you do just have to go download it.
And by the way, it's also nice not to hot link. There's advantages and disadvantages to each, but if you do not hot link, that means that you actually have that image on your server, on your, inside your document, whatever. So if something happens and that image goes away, you still have it.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I agree. That can be really useful because like a lot of times they disappear and it's like, well, where'd that image go? Right. And what even was that image if you're looking at it a year later? Right. So, a couple other ones, Pexels is pretty good. A lot of teachers use that one. Although I kind of feel like Pexels, the pictures are kind of like at the higher amateur level and they're not quite as pro, and there's just something a little bit fine about that. But again, you know, it just depends on our uses, right? A lot of our uses are light, and it's just like, I just need a picture that helps me out with this. Definitely all of these are better choices than going to Google image search, because you don't know what you're going to end up with pulling out of Google image search and what the licenses are on those photos. And like, you know, there's just all sorts of image problems with doing that. So go into one of these. One other one that I found is called Burst. Again, it's, you know, I think that this is just a growing, there's just lots and lots and lots more of these choices, even than there was a year or two ago. I think that these are just blowing up all over the place. And then I wanted to share one other section with you, Tim, and we didn't talk about this pre-show, but icons. And so like, you know, the little picture, the stick figure of the man or the woman or whatever, or like just these little basic icon images. I use these as my default design pattern. And so you'll always see if I do presentations or if I'm doing things, you'll always see little icons inside of there, because they're so universal and easy to recognize, but they're also simple and kind of minimalist. And so I use one called the Noun Project, which is a great service, and I actually pay for the version because I just think it's so useful. But there's a free version and there's a paid version. And the same thing with another service called Flat Icons. And I think the paid versions on both of them like let you change the colors of them to match up with whatever presentation you're doing. A few little things like that. And to me, it's just like, I like this service. I use it almost every day. It helps me kind of communicate to my students. Again, for me, language learners, sometimes that little icon can help them out. But that's a great way to collect kind of images, icons, not photos, but images to let you interact and show ideas to your students as well.
Excellent. And along those lines, Canva. Canva is one of the, I've heard about it for years. I've seen incredible things done with it. They do include images, but they also allow you to upload like a picture of you and place it inside images and give you downloads. And it's got a really robust way of manipulating small, easy images. Yeah. It's a really, really nice package for doing that and creating icons or creating content that, photo content that will make your class more streamlined, fit together. So I know one person that for each page in their class, they had a different Canva icon of them.
Oh yeah.
It was their face, but it was something different that they tried to tie to that page, in Canvas. And so it just allowed things to fit together, and you felt like, so she introduced herself with that image, with an image and stuff like that. So you can do a lot of really cool things with Canva. And so it's a nice package for that.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of loading people up with lots and lots of options here. So just to be clear, in the show notes on season 2, episode 17, you'll be able to go and link to each of these. We'll make sure that they're easily available for you. But it's just some searching. Make sure to check on the terms of service and make sure that your licenses are cool. But like I said, most of these are pretty open at this point. And so as long as you... you know, just double check, you should be good.
Thank you for listening today. In this episode, we talked about Adobe alternatives and stock photo options. For more information about this show, please visit our website at thehigheredtechpodcast.com. There you will find our podcast and links to the information we've covered.
As always, we do want your feedback, so please go to thehigheredtechpodcast.com and let us know your thoughts. And if you have ideas for future shows, there's a link over there where you can give us your topic ideas.
For everyone at IVC that's listening, if you need help with technology questions, please contact IVC Tech Support, 949-451-5696, or emailing ivctech@ivc.edu. If you have questions about technology in your classroom, please contact me, Tim Van Norman, at tvannorman@ivc.edu.
And if you want to reach out to me about the show, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Tim Van Norman.
And I'm Brent Warner. And we hope this episode has helped you on the road from possibility to actuality. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.